Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are talking about the highly anticipated Dune Part 2. It was supposed to come out last year, came out just a few weeks ago, got delayed because of the actor's strike, but it is out now. We are excited to talk about it. I did hear, either saw this in a tweet or heard it on another podcast or something, that somebody said if it would have come out in this Oscars season, it may have been very interesting in terms of like competing for awards, and Oppenheimer may not have cleaned up everything that it did, which we'll talk about in our Academy Awards recap episode coming up in our next episode. But I thought that was interesting. Like, it'll obviously compete at next year's Academy Awards and we'll probably do pretty well because it won't have to deal with Oppenheimer. So
yes, I wondered the same thing while I was sitting there, but I also thought if it comes out in March, like that is a harder campaign because that's
a longer campaign. Yeah. Yeah.
For people to keep that fresh in their minds. But man, I thought this was so good. I don't know if you feel the same way, but like, I think this is worth the hype and was worth the wait, even though I hated waiting this long for this movie.
So before we get to Dune Part 2, we have one news thing. And again, we're going to talk about the Oscars on our next episode. So this whole Kate Middleton thing that's going on right now, is she alive? Is she dead? Is she sick? I don't know.
Alive.
I've seen so many different things that could possibly be happening. Okay.
I've heard several things. I've heard they're getting divorced. I don't think that, but maybe. I've heard that Will's having an affair.
Okay.
That's hard for me to believe, but maybe. And maybe. Then the other thing is, some people think she could have had a hysterectomy. Here's my thing. A lot of people have hysterectomies. That's not an odd procedure. So it's an emotional one, obviously, because then you cannot have kids anymore. It's removing your reproductive organs if you're a female. But like, that's a pretty normal procedure to have. There's no shame in that.
Yeah. And she is 42, so she's kind of getting near the end of childbearing age. So
And she also had horrible. She had that hypermesis gravidarium, or however you say it.
Yeah.
She had the horrible, like the hardest, most dangerous morning sickness you can have with all three of her kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that was it. And part of me, I feel like I've had two thoughts about this. One is like their private lives should be private. They should be able to keep everything to themselves like anybody else would want or expect. And they owe us no explanation. But at the same time, in England, they're public servants. Like they're being paid. Like, you know, like they kind of don't have privacy in the same way, and they're expected to be transparent. But I think the royal family, especially the current one, is notoriously not transparent. So I'm not surprised they've been hiding it. I don't believe a lot of the conspiracies. I just think they're doing a very poor job about the PR and like releasing photos. But I will say, as much as I obsess over things, this is something I've kind of not cared about. I've read the stories just for fun, but I didn't even really notice I hadn't seen Kate, and I don't particularly care.
Yeah, I don't really follow the royal family too much, so I can't say that I really keep up with them a ton. It's just not something that's ever really interested me for whatever reason. But I heard this was going on, and obviously it's been a big thing. The past couple weeks. So we're still trying to get to the bottom of it, see what's happening.
We are. I'm going to launch an investigation.
Okay, great. We will investigate and get back to you. So time now for recommendations. I just have two recommendations. I have been watching Masters of the Air on Apple TV Plus.
Yes.
Executive produced by Tom Hanks. And I believe Steven Spielberg might be involved with that again. But they did Band of Brothers, which is about the Army, obviously. The Pacific, which is about the Navy. And now Masters of the Air, which is about the Air Force.
Yep.
And it's pretty good. I will say it's gotten better as the show has gone on. It started out a little bit slow. There was not a lot of character development early on. You know, characters died and you were like, I really don't care because I don't really know anything about that character. So, but they've gotten a little better as the season has gone on. Now, I have heard there are some historical inaccuracies, which has been one of the big complaints with the show, is that it's not historically accurate to what actually happened with this division of airmen that flew. So I haven't really looked into the historical side of things too much, but I do know that, that's been one talking point for sure. And this occurs during, World War II, and it's following the actions of the 100th Bomb Group, and they're in England during World War II. So, but I've heard there's some inaccuracies between what happened in real life and what's happening in the show. So,
okay.
But the flying sequences are very good. I think it's worth your time, especially if you liked the other two series. I don't think it's as good as Band of Brothers or The Pacific, but it's not bad, and it's some, you know, it's something to watch. So,
okay. What was then, the other?
Only other recommendation I have is a book. I read The Wager by David Gran, who wrote Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes.
This is his newest book, which is about a shipwreck that happened in the 1700s, I believe. So pretty long time ago. It was very good. I really enjoyed it. I thought for a history book, it could have been really dry and kind of uninteresting, but it was not. He wrote it in a very modern way, even though it's a story that happened, you know, hundreds of years ago. So, and something that I really didn't know about. So I thought it was pretty interesting. So
awesome.
I would check that out. That's the only other book I've read of his besides Killers of the Flower Moon, but Killers of the Flower Moon obviously was good too. I know a lot of people like The Lost City of Z too.
I haven't
read that by him, but The Wager was good. So I got it from the library. So I would suggest it's probably kind of, I mean, you could buy it, but it's kind of like a one and done. Like once you read it, I don't know if you'd read it again because some of the things that happen in it are kind of tragic. And also you would kind of know the story at that point. So I don't know if it has a lot of like readability quality, but it's worth a read one time. And it is a really well-written history book from, you know, him that has also taken some other complex stories and kind of made them very readable and entertaining. So,
well, I have been a TV watching fool. As I've said, I did watch. So I didn't do nearly as well in the ballot this year for the Oscars as I did last year, but I watched more in preparation for this Oscars than I think I've ever watched in my life because I could find so many things on YouTube, Apple. It's basically because we have all the subscriptions. And since we have a baby at home, we haven't been going to the theater. So I either paid to watch things or like found where I could stream them. So I wanted to highlight really of the things I've watched, a lot of like reality TV and stuff, it's fine, but there's nothing that's been wowing me lately at all. But I watched, my favorite things I watched for the Oscars were The Barber of Little Rock. That was one of the documentary short category. It didn't win though. I don't think it did. Oh gosh.
No, I don't believe it did.
Because it was between, they did that. There were documentary shorts and features. I know the ABC's A Book Banning was not. Oh, The Last Repair Shop is the one that won.
Yes.
That was the other one that wowed me. If you all have the time or capacity, I think I found both The Last Repair Shop and The Barber of Little Rock on YouTube. They were fantastic. And if you have 30 to 40 minutes, they're not longer than that. They were so, so, so good. So I highly recommend those. And then out of books I have read this year, I'm actually trying to read more challenging things or books I've put off. I'm trying not to speed read, basically, which I don't speed read, but I'm trying to just like take my time this year and not worry about goals. Like I'm not even going to attempt 100 this year. I don't want to. But the last book I read that I really liked was called First Lie Wins. It's by Ashley Elston. It was actually Reese Witherspoon's book pick for the month, but I had already gotten it from Book of the Month before she had announced that. But it was super good. It was a thriller. It was a quick read. But I love a thriller that catches me off guard that I don't figure out by the end. I like it to surprise me, and this one did. So I would highly recommend that. Again, it was First Lie Wins by Ashley Elston.
Very nice. So, yeah, there's been a lot of good books, or like big books that have come out early in 2023.
Yeah.
Like Kristen Hannah has a new book out. There's somebody else that just had a big book that came out. So, yeah.
Yes. Kristen Hannah has The Women that came out. It's about the Vietnam War, and I wasn't going to read it, but someone, a friend of mine who I trust, said it was probably her favorite Kristen Hannah book. So I last night bought it for my Kindle. So I will be reading that this year.
I have read two Kristen Hannah books, and I've liked both of them like a lot. I read The Great Alone.
Yes.
And then I read The Four Winds. So, and both were really good. Yeah.
Yes.
So I would like to check out this new one. The library does not have it yet. It's like a 57 week wait or something outrageous when I went to go put a hold on it. So I might just end up buying that one. So, Okay, well, let's talk about Dune Part 2, released on March 1st of 2024, rated PG-13 for some sequences of strong violence, brief strong language, and some suggestive material. 2 hours and 46 minutes. IMDb is 8.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 93%. Audience, 95%. Everybody is enjoying this movie. And box office wise, it's made $162 million here in the US. And worldwide, it's made $374 million. So it's doing very well at the box office. And this synopsis for this one is Paul Atreides unites with Zani and the Fremen, while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. So he's teamed up. You may have noticed Zendaya was in the first movie a little bit. She's in the second movie a lot more. Her character comes into play a lot more. And she is the main one that Timothy Chalamet is hanging out with, doing things with during the course of the movie. So she's way more in this one than the first one. Yep. This is directed once again by Denis Villeneuve, who is a French-Canadian director known for Arrival, Sicario, Prisoners, and Blade Runner 2049. Next up, he will likely direct Dune Part 3, and then also Cleopatra. So very interesting. Do we know who's playing Cleopatra yet?
I did find that out, but now I can't remember who it was. So I'll have to look that up. But I did hear who it was.
Let me see.
Because I think some people were not happy about it.
Looks like Zendaya is.
No.
Maybe that was rumors a couple months ago. Is that Zendaya was going to?
It could
Cleopatra.
Be, especially. I mean, Denis loves the certain people he works with.
Yeah. Now, none of these are all just rumors at this point.
Okay.
So I guess we'll see. What actually happens, because none of the big movie sites have reported on it yet. It's all like these kind of rumor sites right now. So, and the IMDb does not have anybody listed in the cast currently.
I just saw that. Yep.
Yeah. But apparently Zendaya is maybe rumored to play Cleopatra. So, okay. Well, that'd be interesting. Hmm. So this is again directed by Denis Villeneuve, as we said, and he did the first one too, and he's going to do the third one as well. So we will take a break here on the show. We will come back. We'll talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for Dune Part 2. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Dune Part 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, starring in the lead role playing Paul Atreides. That is Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, Jared, you know what I've been missing? Could you please give me like 855,000 crush alerts? Thank you so much, Jared. Yes, everyone, I still love Timothy Chalamet. A lot of people say to me, really, that guy? Because he's thin and tall. And apparently some people aren't into that. I'm into it. I'm also just into like French men, French American men that like are fluent in French and are good looking and good actors. But that's just me. Who knows? Anyway, Timothy Chalamet, like Jared mentioned, he plays Paul Atreides. He has multiple names in Dune, though, so if you get confused, totally understandable, but they call him all sorts of different names because he gets a nickname from Chani and the Fremen. Anyway, we'll just call him Paul to keep it easy for everybody. So, of course, Timothy is best known for Call Me By Your Name, Lady Bird, Wonka, Little Women, and Dune, the first Dune. In 2018, he was nominated for a Best Actor Oscar for Call Me By Your Name. Next up, you can see him. It has been announced, Dune Part 3. And a complete unknown.
Very nice.
Then we have Zendaya. She only needs one name because she's so fabulous. She plays Chani in this film. And Jared's right. She has a much larger role in this film. And so does Lady Jessica, who we'll talk about soon. Zendaya is best known for Malcolm and Marie, which Jared and I did cover on the podcast. It was not our favorite movie. But if you are interested, you can listen to that episode yourself. She's also
like, John David Washington, like started off really strong, kind of down like here now.
Yeah.
Like his last few movies have not been great.
Right.
So,
yeah, in that movie, not his best.
No.
Zendaya was also in The Greatest Showman, Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Far From Home, and the TV series Euphoria on Max. Next up, she will reprise her role in Euphoria and will star in the movie Challengers, which I've already seen. There have been previews and other things for that. They're really talking that movie up.
Yeah, that one got delayed too, I think because of the actor's strike. And I got a preview for that before Dune.
Oh, you
time.
Did?
Yeah.
I didn't.
So,
okay.
The Zendaya synergy was in my movie screening. But it looks pretty good.
Okay.
I mean, Mike Face is in it, who was in West Side Story, and I really enjoyed his performance in that. So
okay.
We'll see. It's about, I think it's she's a tennis player. She has an injury, so she can't play anymore. And then like two other male athletes want her to be their coach, but they're like competing for her.
Okay.
But then I think all three of them get involved in a relationship, at least from what the trailer is showing. So,
oh my.
Seems like kind of a sexy movie. And it's supposed to be out pretty soon, next couple of months. So,
yes. Also, if you are interested, I don't recommend it, but if you want to hear our episode on Malcolm and Marie, that is way back. It's episode 91. So, it was way, way back there.
Yeah, I don't even remember what we said about that movie.
I know that we rated
tried to
it
fill
very,
30 minutes
very poorly. lastly, on our featured actors, we have Rebecca Ferguson. She plays Lady Jessica. She is a Swedish actress. A lot of people think she's British. She is a Swedish actress, best known for The Greatest Showman with Zendaya, Dune, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, Mission Impossible Fallout, and Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Next up, she will star in Mercy and also Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2. And this movie is very well known for the cast. It has an excessively large cast, all of them. Part of my favorite thing of this movie is how perfectly cast it is. This movie is also starring Austin Butler, Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, Florence Pugh, Christopher Walken, Dave Bautista, Lea Seydoux, Stellan Skarsgård, and Charlotte Rampling.
Two things before we move on to likes.
Yes.
One, Challengers with Zendaya is out April 26th, so
okay.
Coming up very soon. And
okay.
Do you know who Rebecca Ferguson will be starring with in the film Mercy?
No.
Chris Pratt.
Jared, you got me so excited.
Sci-fi action thriller comes out in 2025.
I was like, so. Tom Hanks? But no. No.
Ryan Gosling? No. Chris Pratt. So... between shooting the Mario movies and Garfield and whatever else he's doing, he's going to do that. So
also, can I just do one call out that was funny? You know, everyone, we all, Jared and I have a chat going during this and we can see each other while we're recording. And he was talking about Timothée Chalamet and said that he's a perfectly respectable celebrity crush and he's 28, older than he thought. The other day I mentioned to someone at work, I was like, don't worry, Timothy's just getting older. And they're like, but you're also getting older. And I was like, yeah, but it's like less of a problem. Anyway, I love Timothy and I am a Timothy Chalamet stan, if you will.
Yeah, you just have to compete with Kylie Jenner. So
okay. Certain areas I don't worry. Certain areas I do. I'll leave it there.
So we'll move on to our likes now for Dune Part 2. My first like is that I thought this one advanced the story a lot more than the first one did. And obviously that's kind of going to be the case whenever you have like a part two of something. But part one was really a lot of setup. It felt like there wasn't a lot of big events happening or big consequences. But part two kind of introduces some more branches into the story with Zendaya's character, with Austin Butler's character, who we'll talk about here in a few minutes, Javier Bardem, Rebecca Ferguson, as you mentioned, already a bigger part of this movie too. And I really liked kind of all those storylines. I thought it helped the movie move really, really nicely and was well paced, but also it kind of brought you more into the world of Dune. And I know you've read the book, and the thing in Dune is that there's these different houses, and obviously Timothée Chalamet, Paul Atreides is in House Atreides, which is no more at this point, because spoiler from the first movie, Oscar Isaac dies. So, but then you get the Fremen and you get House Harkonnen in this. And so you get some more things coming in, which I really enjoyed in terms of like multiple storylines kind of going all at once.
Yes. And I think this movie did such a good job of separating the storylines. Like for Dune, I think part of what intimidates people about the book is it's large, but also there are so many different people to keep track of. But I think that's part of the genius of it is it all makes sense. Like all the storylines wrap up, you understand who belongs where and what their beef is with somebody else. And I think that the movie did an excellent job adapting this to the screen, where I felt like I understood, even though I haven't read the book, because I read it now 2 years ago. So there were things I forgot. I will tell you, I'm not a fanatic in the sense where I know exactly where there are differences from the book. I did have questions. I came home. My parents came to visit us, actually, and we went to go see the movie. And my dad is completely enamored with Dune. And I said to him a couple things I brought up. I was like, I don't remember this happening. I don't remember everything I didn't remember. He's like, yeah, that wasn't in the book, or it was different in the book.
Okay.
So I picked up on it, but I'm not enough of a fanatic to tell you exactly what was wrong and exactly what was in the book. But a lot of it, I think, was more for... I don't know that continuity is the right word, but so the movie would make sense. It wasn't like extreme differences. The only main thing, that's why I didn't put it as a dislike, by the way. But I think they did a really good job of explaining kind of like what everyone's motivations were, who everybody was to each other. And the only major difference, there's not like a cliffhanger at the end. Denny clearly did this so that he could make Messiah, like the next film. That's fine. I didn't have a problem with the ending. So again, I didn't put those in the dislike, but I think they did a really good job of explaining people where they're at and picking up where Dune 1, part 1 left off.
Yeah, that is another thing, is it picks up like right after the first movie ends, which is really nice because you don't need to know anything that happened. Like there's no real time period that passes in between, or not very much at all, between the first movie and the second movie. And obviously that's how it would be in the book too, is that the first two movies are just that first book. Right. So there in the book, there's not going to be like a gap or anything when you just go to the next chapter. So I like that they kept that in the movie too, where it just kind of second movie just starts right where the first one ended. So, yeah. Another like is the musical score in this is really good. Hans Zimmer doing the music for this, has moved to work with Denis Villeneuve his last couple movies instead of Christopher Nolan. And Christopher Nolan's on the Ludwig Göransson train now, who just won an Oscar for his score in Oppenheimer. But this will likely be nominated for an Oscar for best score, I would have to think, because this music is so good. It's so kind of creepy and a little Middle Eastern at times, mm-hmm. which is like some of the locations they're shooting at. Mm-hmm. And obviously a big space vibes going on too. So Hans has really made a really cool score for this.
Yeah, the score was beautiful. And really a lot of people, you know, I think Jared and I look out for that kind of thing because we love movies and we also like music a lot. So I think we notice it. But a lot of people I talked to about this movie who saw it before me, that was like the number one thing they talked about was how good the music was. And I think when you talk to people who maybe don't normally notice that as much or care about it, like that's really telling when that's the first thing that comes out of their mouth that they thought was so good. I thought that was beautifully, beautifully done. And then alongside that, just the music going so perfectly with the story, I cannot say enough good things about the cast and the acting. I feel like everybody was perfectly cast. There wasn't a single person, even the person I wasn't sure how I was going to feel was Christopher Walken. He did a great job. I feel like Christopher Walken, you worry about him becoming kind of like a caricature because people do so many imitations of him. And, you know, he's not a joke at all. Oh, Jared did think of one. I forgot. That was the only thing that made me mad. Thank you.
We'll talk about that in dislikes.
Let's save it for a dislike. There's one character I didn't like. But Christopher Walken was the one I went in thinking, I'm not sure if I'm going to like him in this role. He did really well. And I liked, I mean, mainly we only see him for the most part, the majority of the film. He interacts with Florence Pugh. That's his daughter. He did a really good job, and I thought that was good casting. So kudos to whoever cast the film, which, by the way, that's going to be an award next year at the Oscars. They're going to do a casting award. That's brand new.
Yep.
And I also just think everybody did a great job in their role. And one thing I think was better in the second, in part two, than the first one, I feel like people were more settled and secure in their character. Like, they mm-hmm. had a greater understanding of the story, and so they were able to be better actors.
I think some standouts for me, and you had it later on the list, but we can talk about it now, is Austin Butler in this movie is really, really good. This is probably the best thing that he's acted in so far. This is even better than Elvis, which he got a lot of praise for. But I think his role in this, he is so mean and menacing as a member of House Harkonnen. And he's just really doing a great job in this, kind of being the villain in this particular movie. And Denny does this thing when you're first introduced to him where it's kind of like monochromatic. The color palette changes. It's just like whites, grays, and blacks for about 15, 20 minutes while we're off, like just kind of meeting his character and kind of learning his motivations and stuff. But I thought he acted this really well. I was a little concerned because I'd seen some videos of him doing interviews and stuff, and he still had the freaking Elvis voice going on. But
it's getting better.
It is. He has it in Masters of the Air too. He's in that show that I mentioned earlier. But it's it was gone, which is good.
So he was on Colbert talking about this role of Fed Rautha, and Denis used infrared camera. So that's how, because a lot of people thought they were like, did they just remove his teeth? They didn't. I think he talked about it. So I would encourage you to watch the interview if you're interested. But I think they painted something on his teeth, but also using infrared camera, something that's how they get that kind of eerie element and how everything looks like it's kind of like black and white. But I thought that was genius. I would have never thought to do a camera trick like that. I thought it worked really well for those scenes too. Because sometimes I don't like when a movie, like Maestro did that, where it was like black and white for some of it and color. I don't always love that choice, and I don't always understand that choice. I think Wizard of Oz, it works perfectly. Wizard of Oz makes perfect sense why black and white and then it goes to color. But I think a lot of movies do that poorly. I thought this made a lot of sense and kind of was like the tone or whatever was kind of like the world that Austin Butler's character was in. So he did a great job. He definitely seemed like, I always forget if it's a sociopath or a psychopath. I know they're different. He was one of them for sure.
Yeah. He was very good. Another standout for me, I really liked Javier Bardem as well. I thought his character was really, really good in this too. And he obviously has a bigger role here in this second movie as Stilgar than he did in the first movie. But he's kind of Paul's right hand man and is like encouraging him and is telling him, hey, like, you've got the strength to do this. Here's some advice. He's kind of training him. He's one of the big players when Paul rides the sandworm for the first time. And I just thought he added a lot of humor to this as well, not necessarily by the way his lines were written, but just the way that he was like delivering his dialogue was pretty funny. So I thought he added some, I didn't expect this movie to be funny, but there were a couple times in my theater that he got a big laugh off of, you know, a line that he said. So
yeah, we had, that was another thing that I can't really rate the film for this, but we had a super respectful audience when we went early on a Saturday morning and everybody was so into it. It was completely packed. It was a full theater, but it was really quiet up until Stilgar made some joke or like said something kind of like he had a good delivery, like you just mentioned, and everybody laughed. So he offered that comedic relief. And another thing I was surprised by, this isn't a like or a dislike, but just talking about characters, I've been watching, I think every interview that came out, I have watched every interview with this cast, or darn near close to all of them. And it was weird how long into the film it was before we saw most of these people. We didn't see Josh Brolin for like over an hour. Stilgar was probably 30 minutes in.
Austin Butler's like a while too. Yeah.
Another fun fact, in case you guys, just because I've said this so many times, but I don't care for science fiction. I don't understand it. But Dune is like the one thing I have just loved from start to finish, the book and the movies. But Princess Irulan is actually the narrator of the book. So I think that's cleared up. I think Denny did a good job of explaining that at the beginning of this film, because she's like recording the events as they're happening. But that was a good reminder for me, because I did forget that she was the narrator ultimately of the book. So if you're ever wondering, like, you start reading it and you're like, who is this talking? It's her.
Another like that I had is I thought the CGI looked really good in this movie. Now, obviously Denny's pretty good at this point in his career, and also they aren't like cranking these out like Marvel movies, so they have a little bit more time to work on the CGI. But I thought like the sand crawlers and stuff, and obviously like shooting like in the desert and on location is going to help the CGI look better, because not everything is coming off of a green screen or a blue screen. You have like the actual environment that the actors are in. So I thought the CGI was really well done in this movie. I know they used some practical effects as well, but at times when they couldn't do that, there wasn't a point where I was like, oh, that looks really bad. Or like the ornithopter fight was, I thought, really well done too. And obviously most of that's CGI, if not all of it. So I thought it was just really, it looked very good visually. So
totally agree. And my last like is kind of along the same lines, but it's about fight choreography. You know how some movies, I think you watch them and you can tell the actors, if they're really doing their own fight choreography, that they're uncomfortable doing it. Like, they don't believe what they're doing. They don't feel confident in the moves. Or you can tell it's just a fake staged fight. I thought the choreography in this was so good. Like anytime somebody had a knife, dagger type situation, I was scared. But especially the scene near the end with Fed Rautha and Paul, it was so good. It was very believable. It was scary. It was intense. And it seemed like they had rehearsed that probably 350 times before they called action. I just thought that was incredibly well done. So whoever did the stunt choreography and the fight choreography for this film did a superb job.
Another thing that I liked during that scene is that they just took all the music out too. So there was, I felt like that amped up the tension and the drama, because this whole movie we've had this soundtrack playing in the background while pretty much anything is happening. And then for this one, big focal scene, they decide Denny decides to not have music there. And I thought that definitely added to just you paying more attention to the fight. And it takes place in a small space too, which I thought was really well done. So it is all hand-to-hand combat type stuff. But like you said, it was choreographed really, really well. So, right. Before we move on to dislikes, I wanted to talk about, I guess, the twist a little bit. So I guess if you're listening and you haven't watched Dune yet, we've spoiled a few things, but not much. But this is kind of a big spoiler. I did not know, because I had not read the book, that Paul is actually a member of House Harkonnen.
Yes.
He's not a member of House Atreides. And I did not realize that until it was revealed in this movie. So I thought that was a pretty interesting twist from a story perspective that I know obviously happens in the book. But in the book, does it happen at that same time, like right after the fight, or?
I genuinely can't remember that specifically. I know that it's revealed. And another thing I forgot, though, that's kind of along, like just, it was one of the questions I asked my dad because of this very same storyline. I did forget, because Lady Jessica is really his mom, and she gave birth to Paul.
Yep.
But she is never married to Leto. I always forget. Leto. She was like, not really, kind of like a concubine. So at the end, Paul is going to be, another spoiler, so turn this off if you don't want to hear it. He's going to marry Princess Arulin, but he's obviously going to still get with Chani. So it's kind of going to be the same situation where Leto was with Princess Lady Jessica.
Yes.
Anyway, the Bene Gesserit, they are supposed to all have girls. Like, that's the thing, because women actually rule this world, which is cool. That was so very ahead of the times.
Yeah, she drinks the worm juice, and she's able to see.
Yes.
Yeah.
But she chose to have a son. She went against her training
the Bene Gesserit.
To have a son because Leto wanted a boy. So I know that doesn't answer your question. I'm just saying that's like another thing that I kind of forgot that I was thinking about. So I don't know when it's revealed. I do know that it is revealed in the book that he is Harkonnen. And so if anyone's keeping track and you're trying to figure this out, so the Baron, Skarsgård's character, is his grandpa. So Austin Butler is his cousin.
Yes. Yep.
Fed Rautha. And Fed Rautha is also cousins with Dave Bautista's character. I'm blanking on his name.
Oh, yes. I forget his character's name. So
he sucks, though. I mean, whatever. Anyway.
he's pretty evil at this movie, for sure.
He is evil.
He's just, like,
unhinged.
Knocking people off left and right. Like,
yeah.
Kill whoever comes in sight.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that this movie demonstrated his acting range very much.
Not
but
really.
That's okay. He's not that important, so whatever.
No, I think he's probably better in the Guardians movies than he is in this. But, you know.
So I'm sorry I didn't answer your question.
That's okay.
At all.
On to dislikes real quick, which we don't have very many.
Yeah.
So obviously this ends on a cliffhanger. It's setting up Dune Part 3, which I didn't know that they were making a Dune Part 3. You know, I thought maybe, but they are, it's going to be a trilogy or even maybe more. The interesting thing though for Dune Part 3 is that now that you've discovered that Paul is a member of House Harkonnen, he's going to rule House Harkonnen. So that's obviously going to be an interesting factor in the third movie. So, but this movie kind of ends on a cliffhanger. It also doesn't end. I think some people I talked to were expecting this to, you know, end in a big battle, or because they were just expecting more action than the first one, which I think it does have more action than the first one, but that final sequence is just kind of a fight scene between two people. Then the movie's kind of over. So it's a little disappointing, the ending, because now you just got to wait for the third one. So
that was really my, I didn't hate the ending. Like, I don't dock it major points, but it was clearly service to, like, I'm going to make Messiah. The next book is Messiah.
Mm, okay.
So first of all, I'm upset because I'm like, dang, do I have to read that now too? Because, like, Doom was hard. But also, I'm excited. I mean, clearly I love this, so I am excited for it. But I feel like they could have ended the movie like the first book ended and just made the next movie. They didn't have to, like, leave it on a ta-da, like a cliffhanger note. I think that was kind of silly. So that was something I didn't love about the film.
Another dislike that I had is I thought that Rebecca Ferguson's character, she was really good as her character. But I just thought, when is she going to have her baby? Like, she was pregnant in the first movie. Yeah. She's pregnant throughout all of this movie. I just felt like it was a little, and I know this is a different world, but I was just like, this seems a little unrealistic that she has not had this child yet.
Well, and the baby is clearly advanced. I mean, she can talk to the baby. The baby has thoughts. The baby has an understanding of her brother and, like, this Bene Gesserit world. So I'm with you. I don't remember specifics about gestational age with these women and when they give birth, but it did seem like a long time. I don't think that didn't really stand out to me. But I did keep wondering, I couldn't remember if she was going to have the baby in this film or not. So the whole time I was thinking, like, is Lady Jessica going to give birth? And I couldn't remember. So that did throw me a little bit too.
Yeah. And then that scene where they, like, make her drink the blue worm juice.
Yes.
And they were like, oh no, we did something bad. She's pregnant.
She's pregnant.
I was like, oh, maybe she's going to have it right now, or it's going to die or something.
Yeah. I think that was more to scare you, because you're supposed to be scared, because then you realize how powerful she is, that she knows how to fight the poison.
Yeah. And she gets tattoos on her face. She goes,
that was
full
so
into
good.
It.
I don't know how they did that. I don't know if they actually put that on her face or if that was all CGI, but that, I thought that looked good.
Yeah, that was good. Dislike is Anya Taylor-Joy shows up in this movie for like 45 seconds. And I don't really understand what her character's doing in this. Like, Anya, you're going to be in Mad Max. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
She's a sister. But
she walked all these red carpets and stuff. And I was like, I thought she's going to have a bigger part in this movie.
Yeah.
And she's not even really in it that much.
Here's my issue. That was the only casting choice when I freaked out like 10 minutes ago when Jared mentioned it. That was the one that I was like, are you serious? Because in what I don't like about that casting choice, Anya, I truly think everybody's like, we need a girl that's kind of weird looking. And they put Anya Taylor-Joy as if there's no other, like, even Emma Stone is someone who looks kind of ethereal, looks kind of like not, she's not mainstream, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Anya is like that too, but I think there are other girls who are not mainstream looking, but you could have taken an unknown actor and put them in this film and started a career for them or something, but you've picked Anya Taylor-Joy. And to me, that was actually more distracting than anything, because then I was like, what is she doing here? Even though I knew she played Paul's sister. But I hate that that casting choice, and I'm really over her. I'm really over her being like, hey, I look weird. I'm a weird girl. And she's in every movie playing a weird girl. So I just really disliked that choice.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird choice. And then the only other dislike is that this was a little long. I did find some parts where I was like a little, it just slowed down a little bit, or I got a little uninterested at times. And not very much, though, but I just thought there were a couple of sequences that probably could have been cut down a little bit. But then again, there were so many cool sequences in this movie, like when Paul was riding the worm, when those at the very beginning of the movie, that really cool fight where, like, the soldiers just, like, dropping from the sky and, like, dying was, like, really neat. There's other really cool things that happen. So I don't know what you would really cut. And I feel like you need a lot of that in there so that the audience understands what's happening with the story. Yeah. But maybe just you could have tightened up just maybe a couple of things. I mean, 2 hours and 45 minutes is long for a movie. So.
It is. Okay, so I'm on the fence about this. I put it as a dislike, but I actually would argue that this movie did not have much that could be edited. I really did give it some thought when I was kind of like critiquing this film and doing notes. I don't know much that I would cut because I think all of it really aided the story. My issue in general is with how long movies are getting in general. Not Dune. I think Dune is complex. I think it's entertaining enough and so unique and so original that like, it's okay. I can sit through once in a great while, a 2-hour and 45-minute movie. But it's that every, there was even a joke at the Oscars about how movies minimum are like 2 hours and 15 minutes now. And that's stupid. People don't have time for that. And that's also, I feel like if you're a good storyteller, you don't need that long to tell an effective story. But I'll get off my soapbox. That's just, I'm having more of a problem in general with movies being that long. But I really would argue that for once, the length of this movie is warranted and they made good use of the time.
Yeah, like I think of something like Killers of the Flower Moon, which is like 45 minutes longer than this.
Ridiculous.
And I don't think the story of that, while it is a real life story, I don't think it's as even as complex as Dune is in terms of needing to explain things to the audience. So I think a lot of these could be cut down for sure. So, and I think that might be one reason why that that could be one reason why that Sydney Sweeney Glenn Powell movie did so well at the box office is because that thing's like 1 hour and 50 minutes. So. Yeah. I mean, sometimes people just want to go see a nice breezy 1 hour 45 movie and then be on with their day. So
absolutely. Totally agree.
Okay. On to our scores for Dune Part 2. What are you giving this movie?
I was like, we didn't discuss who goes first. I'll go ahead.
Okay.
So far it's my favorite movie I've seen this year.
Yes,
I have not.
Mine too.
I haven't watched many movies that have been released this year, but I'm not surprised. Like, I feel like this is going to be one of my favorite movies of the year in general. But I'm going to give it a 97.
Okay.
Because,
wow.
I mean, that's high, but I looked at other ones like in the last year that I rated that high or close to that high. And I feel like this movie, I don't have many notes for it. I don't think it was too long. I thought the casting was great. I thought everything was believable. There was good world building. The production value is fantastic. So there's really not a lot of complaints. So 97 for me.
Nice. I'm going to go a little bit lower, but not much. Okay. I'm going to go 91 this one. So I liked it more than the first one. I think I gave the first one 4 stars on Letterboxd. I gave this one 4.5. So I did think it was better. I don't know what I think we reviewed the first one, but I don't remember
what I scored.
So
you gave it 83. I gave it 93.
Okay. So,
and I did. Yeah. I also liked this one better, which is so rare.
And that one was
rare.
What, your favorite movie of the year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That year? Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. So this will definitely be in our top 10 conversation when we get to the end of this year for sure. I know we still have a ways to go, but I think this definitely has a spot in the top 10 right now. So go check out Dune Part 2. Definitely go see it in a theater. It's not going to look, this is a movie that you have to experience in a theater at least once. It won't look as cool on your TV or your at home setup as it will in a theater with big speakers and big sound. So definitely go check that out. And you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook. We're now on YouTube as well at Podcast Silver. So you can watch or listen to our episodes there. There's not really much to watch, but if you use YouTube more than a podcast app, you can find us there as well. And then on our next episode, we're going to be recapping the 96th Academy Awards.
Yay, I can hardly wait. And Jared soon is going to be a married man. We are so excited.
I am. It's coming up.
Woo! Best day ever. Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.